We'd like to welcome you to the
Radio.
We'd like to welcome everyone to Africa on the Move. That's right, Africa is on the Move. As your host, Brother African, we're going to be talking about and discussing and giving actually a tribute. We're going to be giving a tribute today of this upcoming historical great event and institution for the total liberation and unification of our people. And the institution that we're going to be discussing today and giving a tribute to is Africa Liberation Day 2014. That's right, African Liberation Day 2014 is right around the corner. It will take place on May the 17th up in Washington, D.C. at the Festival Center, which is located 1640 Columbia Road, Northwest. The 1640 Columbia Road, Northwest at the Festival Center. We're going to be today giving a tribute to African Liberation Day and a solemn tribute to the organization that has been principally dedicated and stood fast in holding up the ideals, the principles of this great institution. And that organization is the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. And discuss with us today about African Liberation Day and some of the things that are going on in our community and movements, we have with us Brother Haki Kamafi Muchoki. He's the organizer for the African Awareness Association. And we have one of our brothers and sisters from outside of Africa in the African diaspora, Brother Hermel Wingai. He's a representative organizer for West Papua New Guinea. We'd like to first and foremost welcome our guests today. Welcome to Africa on the Move, Brother Haki and Brother Hermel. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Brother Hermel, we'll start with you. Coming from West Papua New Guinea, can you just tell us something about you in general, your background?
Yes, I'm Hermel Wingai. I come from West Papua. That's on the other side from Papua New Guinea, this independence country. But on the other side, it's called West Papua. It's still colonized by Indonesian government. Myself, I spent a couple of times in jail as a former political prisoner. After I released out from prison, and then I decided to escape from my country to Australia by boat. So I've been in exile almost 8 years now, away from my family, my brothers and sisters, and also from my community. So I'm now end up here in the United States since 2012 as one of the visiting scholars, but also as a human rights activist trying to get the message across to the international community so they can know what's happening in West Papua right now.
Okay, and Brother Haki, briefly for those who may not know who you are, give us just a brief introduction. Who is Brother Haki?
Oh, I'm a community organizer. I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I'm principally concerned with social justice issues as it pertains to the African community. And I'd like to see more institutions built in the cities in terms of addressing some of the sociological needs or psychological needs of our people.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think we have a third guest just going on. Let me just check this. Brother who's just called in from 0673, would you introduce yourself?
Hey, Lisa Kevlar. I'm just listening, brother.
Okay. All right, my brother. Thank you. All right, let's move forward.
I couldn't
forward.
Get you online, so I...
Okay, let's just move forward. This is what we're going to want to do at this point in time. This year, we'll be celebrating 56 years of the Institution of African Liberation Day. For those who are not familiar with the history of it, just a general brief description of the history of the essence of African Liberation Day. We must remember that it originally comes from the origin and its foundation of African Freedom Day, which was born on April 15, 1958, out of Accra, Ghana, from the great Osassafor Kwame Nkrumah. That was the African Freedom Day, celebrating the ongoing independence of the African countries. And from 1958 to 1963, at the founding of the Organization of African Unity, they changed it from African Freedom Day to African Liberation Day. And since then, from 1958 up to today, this great institution has been flourishing throughout the world, and it has become a very important institution, particularly in the U.S., for Africans who cannot or will not be able to go home because they are financially oppressed. So since they can't go home, one of the best times you can go home to Africa is by coming to African Liberation Day. This particular institution has been held up in terms of its values, its principles, and history by an organization that we support and endorse highly, which is the All African People's Revolutionary Party, who are the continuators and inheritors of the work of Kwame Nkrumah, Secretary and Kwame Ture, formerly known as Stokely Carmichael. When you come to this festival, this year, which is May 17 at the Festival Center, you will get a chance to see and meet millions of members of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, but more importantly, you will be participating in the continued historical continuance toward the ongoing liberation of our people. One of the things with Brother Herman, when we think about African Liberation Day, we know that in principle it's a revolutionary institution. It came into existence understanding the necessity for a revolution, particularly the African Revolution and the Socialist Revolution. And one of the features of African Liberation Day, they will have a lot of liberation movements and movements of people struggling throughout the world. What I would like to do at this point in time is share with the people something about the present current realities of the movement that you're involved in, what's going on in West Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, thank you. I attended African Liberation Day since last year, and I got impressed because this is one thing that part of the building the movement together and solidarity with the people, those people having like us as a West Papuan. And yeah, we've been struggling almost 51 years now under Indonesian occupation, Indonesian government. So my people is still colonized by Indonesian government, and Papuan people and the land is still close to international community. So we don't have international access yet. Still like close to the international community. So like Indonesian government banned a lot of foreigner people. Like they don't wanted any media foreign people or any human rights group, any politician or come from the outside to visit West Papua. So West Papua is still close to the outside world. So, yeah. But recently, like, the technology is, helping. Internet technology is like for instance, today we have discussing through this kind of radio talk is get message out. Even West Papuan people, we still are close, Papuan and Papuan people are close to international community. So Papuan people right now is still living in a political situation that many people being arrested, like more than 50 people, political prisoners, are living in jail now. So they've been spend their life in jail, sacrifice their life in jail for our people right to be free, separate from Indonesian government. One thing I would like to let you all know that since Indonesian government, first days of Indonesian government getting to Papua land in 1963, so since 1963 until today, West Papuan people have been killed, more than 500,000. It's half million people been killed by Indonesian government. So slow genocide is still is happening right now in West Papua. So my presence here in United States, we would like to encourage American government or international community to look at our situation. So thank you, brother. This is something that I appreciate that since last year on the theme of the African Liberation Army. It's called Africa is on Fire, and today Africa on the Move is something that encouraged me as well. We try to move together to get the message so people can hear and learn about this issue.
Well, we know when our mother called for the forward progress of struggling for Pan-Africanism, that is the only solution to our people problem worldwide. And one of the things I'd like for you to do, can you just give us an idea demographically, how many Africans in the area? What is the makeup or the number of Africans who live there? And how would you, matter of fact, how would you assess the behavior of the so-called intellectuals inside of your country, inside of the movement? For example, this year, African Liberation Day, will speak to and will address this question of smashing neocolonialist intelligentsia. They are the true face of the counter-revolution. What role has the intelligentsia has been playing inside of your struggle that has forbidden the people towards achieving their liberation? Because you know, when we look at other African countries and movements, it's the intelligentsia who are in the forefront of creating all of these backwards and reactionary ideas that are confusing our people. As a part of it, you know, they are responsible for one of the major causes why people can't move forward. How would you view the role of the intelligentsia in your movement?
I think this is very good question, because our presence is like symbolize the people that's fighting for their right to self-determination. People like in Africa or in African, as West Papuans, to be free from the foreign foreign country or foreign domination, and also the exploitation that we facing. So I look at this is very important to me and my people to learn also from the other part of the world that they've been suffering from the experience in life and facing, like in South Africa we learn, and also I learn about the something that's what's one of the our great leader here, Malcolm X, always said, like, you can't separate peace from freedom, because no one can be at peace unless he has his freedom. So, like, learning from the Malcolm is like inspire West Papuan people. Like, a lot of trouble happening in West Papua. We don't have any freedom. So this is something like I feel like connection, like the words of Malcolm X, like, inspire us to fight freely. And like here in the United States, I really enjoy my freedom, but also working together with African Liberation Army is something that I feel blessed to be part of, and I'm looking forward to see any chance that we can work it towards that.
Okay, Brother Herman, we're going to stop you right now. As we mentioned earlier, we're doing a tribute to African Liberation Day. And one of the things that African Liberation Day does, it gives you a global perspective of not only what's going on in the African community, but what's going on in the liberation movements and humanity throughout the world. And with one of the other guests we have today, we have a sister from El Salvador that is on, and she will come and share perspective with us. We'd like to know, particularly in terms of the Western Hemisphere, dealing with indigenous lands. I'd like to welcome the sister to Africa on the Move. I'd like to actually introduce herself and share with our people a little bit on the present conditions on what is going on in El Salvador. Welcome to Africa on the Move. To my sister from El Salvador. To my sister from El Salvador, can you hear us, please?
Yes, I'm here. This is Jesse.
Okay, Jess, introduce yourself, and we'd like for you to share a little bit about our people, what's going on in terms of the present reality of the history and the struggle of African-American people, African-American men, what is going on?
Yeah, very happy. I am, my name's Jesse, and I am, originally from El Salvador. Very happy to say that, very recently in March 9th, this past March 9th, We just finished and were very successful with our our party, our liberation party. The name of that is Frente Farabundo Martí para la Liberación Nacional. So it means a National Liberation Party for the Frente Farabundo Martí. So it kind of sounds very similar to your party. And, you know, it was born out of this party, this Liberation Party in El Salvador, was born out of the civil war struggle there during the 1980s. El Salvador had a civil war between 1980 and 1992. In 1992, we had peace accords. One of the signers of the peace accord for our party, his name is Salvador Sanchez Cereng. And Salvador was just a candidate he was the former vice president of El Salvador, the first vice president who ran with the current president, Mauricio Funes. We won our first national presidential election in 2009, and they have been serving for 5 years. And this past March 9th, we just finished the consecutive elections, and we won re-election. So now Salvador Sanchez Cereng, one of the signers of the peace accords, is now going to be our president. He was one of the commanders of the Liberation Party during the war. So we're very happy right now with you know where El Salvador is going, and very happy to be here with you.
Let me ask you, what is FLMA's position and the government program as it relates to the building of socialism for the masses of the people there? What is that position, and how do you view that?
Okay, so the party has had the party was born in 1980, sometime during the 80s, to bring together several groups. Within those, there were five different civil movements that were, you know, present in El Salvador that were trying to be, you know, demand a fair state for poor people in El Salvador from the government. And then, so that civil struggle was what led to the civil war. And those five different factions included, you know, people who were, you know, in the Communist Party, other people were Socialist Party, you know, different versions of it. And then there was a student movement, there was a workers' rights movement, and then there were another group that was more, you know, that advocated for changes via an armed struggle. And so all these five groups kind of came together and realized that they all wanted the same thing. They all wanted changes in the civil society of El Salvador. We wanted fair, education and, you know, education for all its citizens, health, housing, the ability to be able to have a job and not, you know, not be able to organize. Workers needed to organize for fair jobs and wages, and none of that was possible before the 90s in El Salvador. And so, but it has been an evolution. And the party now, as it is the last campaign, our president, now president-elect Salvador Sanchez Cereng, he ran on a platform that included, you know, more job opportunities for everyone in the country, increased educational opportunities for everyone from, you know, from kindergarten through the higher education and the university level. One of the things that Salvador Sanchez Cereng did while he was vice president, he was also the minister of education. And when he was, you know, the minister of education between 2009 and 2014, he decided to institute a program to give free shoes, free uniforms, free school supplies to students nationally, and as well as a cup of milk for every student at the beginning of every day of school. And what that has done is not only has it allowed for more students to go to school, you know, there are less children who just whose families are spending less money for the expense of going to school, So now they have, you know, those families don't have to spend money, which was an equivalent of maybe about $60 to $100, depending on which school you went to, for your schools and your uniforms. Those families now can invest that money elsewhere, and their kids can go to school. And, you know, but it also has incentivized the small businesses in those areas, because now the shoemakers know that they have to make shoes for kids, and they're contracting with the state, and uniform makers are contracting with the state. So it has incentivized local economies as well as provided greater educational opportunities for students. So it really is more dynamic relationship with the state government, with the national government, and local communities. So I think those types of programs were a big difference for the people in El Salvador, especially the more marginalized and the people who were in the rural areas and who had less access to school and were poor communities. You know, now those are the things that made a difference and that allowed for our party to be reelected in this past March.
Good. We'd like to let our listening audience know that we are doing a tribute to Africa Liberation Day 2014. This year, the theme for African Liberation Day is Smash Neocolonist Intelligentsia, the True Face of the Counter-Revolution. And with us today, we have Sister Jesse just here from the FMLN out of El Salvador. We have with us Brother Herman from West Papua New Guinea. And we also have with us Brother Haki Machoki, who is a member of the African Awareness Association. And right now, we'd like to bring Brother Haki in and raise this question from Brother Haki. Brother Haki, when we think about African Liberation Day, we also think about the issue of Pan-Africanism. We talk about this connectedness, this oneness, but we also talk about the importance of the land question. Can you just talk a little bit about why it's important and what is the advantage of African people seeing their problems from a collective perspective in terms of interconnectedness and Africa being the core for the change? What is your take on that?
Well, I think that the question of land is a pivotal one. I think if you are to control your destination, certainly you have to be able to control your land. And in that context, one of the things we have to be very, very aware of is the fact that Africa has a tremendous amount of wealth. In fact, you know, Africa, in terms of resources, you know, was vital to the world. Having said that, if in fact we can control the resources, you know, of Africa, then we can affect the changes throughout the world. We talk about, you know, education for everybody, and we talk about food and shelter for everybody. Those things can only be a reality once Africa is free. Currently, Africa is under the grips of the colonial and imperialist powers, and so therefore is not in a position to truly control the economic, political, social systems. So the struggle is to bring into existence, you know, a truly liberated economic, political, social system, which suggests that Africa is in a position to make changes, to create a new paradigm for the world, and to make the world a better place to live in. Now, in terms of achieving that, and there's no question about it, we can't do it individually. It can only be achieved collectively. And so any kind of discourse as pertains to progressives or revolutionary movements in Africa has to be solidified in terms of bringing about the kind of change, the necessary kind of change that we need to see in terms of a more powerful Africa and a better world that we live in. So I think that it's very, very crucial that the AAPRP, you know, serves as a conduit in terms of, you know, bringing together, you know, different factions, progressive revolutionary factors in Africa, in terms of sitting there having that common discussion in terms of the relevancy, in terms of why they have to work together and bring about the kind of necessary change that we need. We understand that given the power of the imperialist forces, we understand their ability to undermine, their ability to manipulate, their ability to a large extent to control the agenda of Africa. So therefore, AAPRP is in a position to short circuit, you know, that reality in terms of, you know, making it possible to bring about a different paradigm, which you know, move the world in a different direction, a more positive direction, in which all these issues in terms of poverty, you know, injustice, needless suffering will no longer be issued throughout the world.
We're going to alert our listening audience that we're going to go over few minutes, and if you don't hear this program in its entirety, please go to our archive by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/africa-on-the-move, and you can hear the entirety of this program and others. Let's continue with Brother Herman. Brother Herman, in terms of your struggle, how do you identify your enemies? Who are the enemies as relates to the struggle of the brothers and sisters in your movement in West Papua New Guinea? Who is the role of the West and countries not led and these various reactionary intelligence agencies? How do you identify your enemies, or who are your enemies? What problems are you encountering?
Sorry, can you say again? I can hear.
I want you to. Can you talk to other terms of what obstacles? Who are? How do you identify? How do you identify the enemies when your movement? Who are the people who are creating resistance or oppressing the brothers and sisters over in your area?
The one obstacle I'm facing here, like in United States, we don't have many West Papuans people are living in United States. So like here in Washington, D.C., just myself. So that's one thing that I'm facing in my daily life is like how I can organize myself to get connected with the other American friends, like now with the African friends to build the movement together to get the message come out and be like part of the moral responsibility also in America. So within West Papua and themselves also is message to come to outside as well. It's difficult for us. Like I say before that West Papua is still a closed society. Like all foreign journalists are banned, like human rights groups, lawyers, foreign politicians, or even tourists are either banned from entering our country in West Papua. So that's a restricted area to visit West Papua. And this is something I look at that in different perspective from Papua and themselves from inside. We don't our message is still not covered by other foreign journalists and also here in United States still working on that how we can build a movement together. So this is something I look at as one biggest challenge. Just myself, it's hard. It's hard for me to get the message out to the American Society.
Can you share with us how can people find out more about your struggles, your people's struggles, and how can they help your particular struggle, our particular struggle? How can they assist you? How can they assist our people?
Suggesting is that because of the technology is changed, is one thing. It's like helping other people never been to West Papua. They can find the information through the research on the Google and find us where is West Papua located and what's the West Papuan people life they are facing every day. But I would like to suggesting that if you have event or you want to learn about the West Papua, because I'm here in the United States, so if you want to want to have me to come along and speak up in your church or your community or your organization, I'm happy to do that and try to get message to be here. And also I encourage you all to write a letter to your different members of parliament or U.S. Congress members to represent different countries here, like 50 states. That's, you can write the letter to mention about the current situation in West Papua. That's West Papuan political prisoners. Now many West Papuan political prisoners, they are living in jail. So that's one thing. I, as a former political prisoner, I encourage every American or friends that I met, I always say, could you help me or could you help West Papuan write the letter to mention this political prisoner to your U.S. Congress representative so they can address this issue to the government so we can make a pressure on Indonesia to release all West Papua political prisoners from the jail. I think that's issue
okay,
that I would like to raise.
For people who may would like to invite you to their communities, how could they get in contact with you?
Yes, I can contact through I do believe that African Liberation Day from last year I attended. I have like the contact email, and maybe you can share the email also with the other friends. That's hermanwengai@gmail.com. That's my email address. So also maybe through my Facebook. That's typing my name on the Facebook. I have Facebook connection, so maybe you can be a friend on the Facebook sharing the information. That's the one thing. It's an easy way to get connected.
Yes, thank you. To my brother Haki for African Women Association. You know, one of the things when we talk about the institution of African Liberation Day, we know it was born out of, and it's anti-imperialist, anti-capitalist, anti-Zionist. In terms of looking at our people problems, will they ever be able to resolve the contradiction of racism, the contradiction of sexual oppression, the contradiction of homelessness? Will they ever be able to resolve all of these problems they are facing as long as they are functioning under a capitalist system or imperialist system?
Well, you know, to be very succinct about it, you know, there's no way you can address the social ills that inflict humanity without the dissolution or destruction of the capitalist system. Capitalism is designed to bring the worst out of human beings. It's designed to create the worst kind of human being. This notion that selfishness, that greed, avarice is just a natural way of life is contrary to human ability to actually think. Now, the more you socialize people to be destructive, the more you socialize them to be dangerous, the more you socialize them to be greedy, then the more you undermine your very existence. So therefore, if there's no cooperation among human beings within the society, then how in the world can you work together to create this kind of society in which, you know, everybody feel good about themselves, be in a position to materially provide for one another, to generally live as a human being? Now, if you're in lion society, then of course, then when it takes all kind of attitude, it's apropos for the lions, you know. But when you're a human being, when you have the ability to think, you know, the ability to critically analyze, then clearly any kind of system would suggest that the world should be a dog eat dog, that destruction of human life, destruction of the planet, it's just a natural order of things. Then I think you have to really question that. So we have to understand when we talk about capitalism, we talk about this crazy system, it's unsustainable. And when you look at in terms of overall function of capitalism, even today in the United States, when you look at in terms of the growing gap between the have and the have-nots, in America you got a situation where the wealthy, the 1% of the population, for every dollar created in the United States, 51% of that goes to the 1% of the population. So you got 49 cents of every dollar going to 99% of the population. It's merely it's not sustainable. Even by the capitalist's own critique, even if you go back and you look at Adam, you study Adam Smith, he was very, very clear that capitalism, given terms of its propensity, you know, for destructiveness, can never exist in its terms of fulfilling the needs of the masses of people. So Adam Smith, even the father of capitalism, was very, very clear on that point. So I think that if we want to be truly free, if we want to live as human beings, if we want to have a situation where people have access to health care, to housing, to medical care, to a higher self-esteem, then we have to obliterate capitalism, because there's no getting around that. As long as capitalism exists, you know, there's no way human beings can self-actualize to the level they need to self-actualize. And having said that, there's an implicit, I'm going to say this real quickly, but there is an implicit problem in terms of capitalism people have to understand and they have to appreciate. As the wealth is skewed to fewer and fewer people in the society, we have to understand, the question becomes, what are you going to do with all of these people who do not have access to wealth or access to capital? What do you do with them in a capitalist society? Well, the capitalist society would say that these people's lives are superfluous. They're esoteric. So therefore, you don't need them. So for the system, in all, just in terms of maintaining in terms of balance, in order for it to persist, then it has to find a creative means by which you destroy a large number of people. And so when we look at the terms of the unemployment, when we look at the homeless situation, we look at the healthcare system in terms of, you know, as it impacts on poor people's society. We look at hypertension. We look at diabetes. All of these things are part and parcel result of stress, people being subjected to stress, you know, over and over again. So the question is that inevitably, that to some level, their lives are debilitated, which means that they have a shorter lifespan. So the problem is that, you know, implicit in capitalism is this creative destruction of people, and I think it's something that we have to be concerned about. I think we have to ask ourselves, so what is it about capitalism that has this innate desire to just destroy? So we need to ask ourselves that, because there's no getting around that question.
And I would like to just address the question to both of my guests, both of y'all today, and tell me what y'all think about this premise. African Liberation Day as an institution is also part of the worldwide socialist movement. It sees socialism as an alternative to the well-being of the masses of the people. How do we get our people to come to the understanding that there are alternatives, or there is an alternative? And what we're saying this alternative is socialism. What does socialism do that will change the lives and the behavior of the people? Brother Herman, you can go first, and then Brother Haki. How do you see socialism as a role of changing the lives and well-being of the people? Can you hear me, Brother Herman?
Yes.
Yes. I wanted you to speak to how you view this question of socialism as being an alternative to improve the lives of the masses of our people. How do you view that?
Yes, I do believe that part of the socialist movement that, we all are part of that, and we need to building alliance to working on to giving the understanding to other people to understand those people who need how their life need to be changed to the better industry and not living under circumstances they are suffering. So I look at that socialism movement is very important, because it's a change people's life. How we can change people's life, that's something, the question that we need to educate other people so they can understand the issue, those people in different level to understand, even in the government level, they have to understand that how we are living as a community, to as a human being, facing in every day, because there's something I look at is very, very, very important, how we build a socialist movement and learning each other in everyday life.
Okay, Brother Aki, how do you, can you speak to that question?
I think socialism is the key in terms of saving not only humanity, but in fact saving the planet. I mean, you have enough resources, on the planet in which, you know, you simply can provide for people, you know, and in such a way that it's efficient. Currently in the capitalist system, the distribution of resources is so inefficient that you're destroying all these resources in which you don't have to destroy. So I think socialism is very good in terms of allocation of resources. That's the first thing. I think just in terms of the kind of human being socialism creates, there's no question. Socialism creates a much more healthy, a much more enlightened, a much more positive human being. Because the emphasis of socialism is that, you know, you have the resources. The resources of the world ought to be shared by all people on the planet, not in a particular stratum of society, but the resources should benefit everybody. So I think when you got a situation, a system in place like socialism, which, you know, you have first and foremost the needs of the people, you know, first and foremost, then, you know, everything you do has to do in that regard. For instance, if you look at if you contrast the Scandinavian nations with America, now those Scandinavian nations are all socialist nations. Consistently, year after year after year, when they ask the question, who's the most happiest people in the world? It's the Scandinavians. Who's the most educated people in the world? The Scandinavians. Who are the most well cared for people in the world? The Scandinavians. You know, who are the most humane people in the world? The Scandinavians. There's no accent that the people are very, very positive in their outlook. It's a direct result of the system under which they live. And so this is what we have to understand. And I think for African people, it's particularly important that we embrace this issue of socialism, you know, because, you know, when you look at it, even if historically when you look at terms of injustices inflicted upon African people in the society, I mean, clearly, you know, just in terms of, you know, the kind of labor that was performed, you know, without compensation, that in and of itself, you know, what seems to me will lend itself to really support this notion in terms of the need of socialism, but nothing more than to address historical wrongs. And now, let me raise one other thing, Brother Africa, and this is the thing that people have to get. Now, in America, we're told that socialism is a bad thing. It's wrong. Inevitably, when you ask people about socialism, they frown. They're like, oh, it's a bad thing, because they've been told that by television over and over again by the school system, so they don't know. But if you think back, Brother Africa, to the whole subprime debacle back in 2008, when Obama was elected, and he gave a huge infusion, it started with George Bush, but Obama finished it, and a huge infusion of cash into the system. They took the money from the working people, from poor people, and gave it to the banks and the corporations. It was a transfer of wealth from one sector to the other. It's socialism. See, the point is that the wealthy, the ruling class, don't have a problem with socialism as long as they benefit. They have socialism when it benefits working and or poor people. That's the only time they have a problem with socialism. So socialism is the key in terms of moving humanity forward. It's the key in terms of providing people what they need, and it's the key to saving the planet. So socialism is definitely very, very important.
Okay, on the note, we are running out of time. What we would like to say at this point in time, we'd like to thank our listening audience for allowing Africa on the Move to come to their homes today. We'd like to thank our guests, Brother Haki, Brother Herman, and Sister Jessie. And at the same time, we'd like to share with our audience that we invite you, we encourage you to come to African Liberation Day 2014 in Washington, D.C. on May the 17th. It will be held at Festival Center, located at 1640 Columbia Road, Northwest. This African Liberation Day will be organized by the All African Peoples Revolutionary Party, GC. The theme for this year is Smash Neocolonist Intelligentsia, the True Face of the Counter Revolution. If you'd like to have more information on it, please go to our website at www.aaprp.gc.org. Until next time, let's remember to continue to strive to go forward ever, backwards never. This has been your host, Brother Africa. We thank you, and we see you next week, next Sunday, same time, same place. Thank you. Forward to Africa, AID 2014.